Hello and welcome to the Press Start Podcast, Press Start Australia's weekly video game discussion podcast. I'm your host, Ewan Roxburgh, joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, Kieran.
Hello.
James.
Hello.
Shannon.
Hello.
And Brody.
Hello.
On the show today, we're going to discuss our review of Starfield, the latest on Redfall, updates coming to Final Fantasy 16, PlayStation bumping up its PlayStation Plus prices, and Volition sadly being closed down. But first, James, our friend Harry, published his review of Baldur's Gate 3 to the website this week, where he scored it a whopping 10 out of 10, praising its writing, player progression, and unrivaled player agency. Having now rolled credits yourself, do you agree? Is it a 10 out of 10?
It's really close.
So no, you don't agree. Harry got it wrong.
No. I feel like that was a real setup. it's very good. Very, very, very good. Definitely like top five for me, I think, this year already.
Awesome.
And everyone, obviously, there's different experiences and stuff. Like, my mate had a similar experience to me where the last act just so much went wrong, like from a glitch and
you mean in terms of
kind of perspective.
I thought you meant in terms of your run and
so much went wrong the whole game in that aspect, but like in terms of the actual like game itself, like I just had characters disappear, characters forget what they were doing, I got to the end of a really tough battle and it just crashed. Like, I'd had a really bad time in the third act. But overall, like, that's still, yeah. I've not really played anything like it. And it definitely just needs more people to play it, I guess.
Yeah. I do really want to find time to play this game. Perhaps when it comes to PlayStation and I can kind of get
Is
it out now already? Did I miss
like,
it?
I think dropping?
It's out if you've got, like, the special edition. But I think other ones in a couple of days.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
I can see myself getting like a bit of a D&D group together, and trying to play through it together. That might be a bit of a undertaking, but I do like,
I guess the only thing there is
in theory.
It's such a big game, like getting everyone
and
together every time.
Your progress
is
tied to your save, right? So you've all got to be online
I think
together.
So. But now you can put them in a cupboard, apparently, with the latest update. So they can like be saved, like their progress can be saved separately or something.
Oh, okay.
So you just put them in the
so
cupboard.
So you could kind of go off and go on your own adventure and leave your friends
you
stashed in the cupboard.
Yeah. Okay. It's it's a really good game. There's nothing like it, honestly, like in terms of the player choice and just being able to kill someone and it just changes the course of the game or whatever. Like, that's a simple decision to make, but that is one of them. Like, it's just really cool.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, if you're sort of reading all the dialogue out there at the moment, it certainly seems to be going toe-to-toe with Starfield, perhaps, for RPG of the year. But I am curious to see what Brody has to say on the matter. Brody, you reviewed Starfield and reviewed it, I'd say, more favorably than most, looking at the kind of gamut of review scores that were out there. So why
you
did you give...
Like,
check the Metacritic,
editorializing
mate.
Like four, Brody's review.
It's like 4 points off the Metacritic average anyway, but...
am I saying anything that's inaccurate?
I don't know.
Just calling him the Xbox shill that he is. We'll just put it out there.
I guess on averages, it's
Brody,
not more favorable than most. But anyway, go on.
I'm warning you now. The angle of this podcast is going to be why we gave Starfield a 9 out of 10, because that's
why you
I reckon
wrong.
Might get the clicks.
Yeah.
So. That is the question I'm going to put to you now. Why did you give Starfield a 9 out of 10?
I gave Starfield a 9 out of 10 because, look, it's... I feel like for me, in a lot of ways, it was a return to event gaming. Like, it's been a while since I've had a game like this big, this high profile, and quite frankly, this big that I've justified sinking my time into, which has typically been fairly precious to me lately. I gravitate towards shorter games. So for me to, you know... pump in 2 or 3 days into this thing in the long run probably speaks volumes in itself. But I don't know. I just think there's something special about a Bethesda Game Studio game. Warts and all, like obviously it's not perfect. We've seen a lot of discourse about, you know, whether they overpromised and whether they've underdelivered, all this sort of stuff. But I just think in terms of what they do, if what you're after is you know, pretty much the same thing they've always delivered in like Skyrim and Fallout, but in a space setting and a new IP, then I think this game definitely delivers that. Like, it's got a lot of lore that obviously I'm still unpacking. Like, I've seen probably, you know, barely a fraction of the game in even the time I've played. And it's probably the most polished game that they've put out. Obviously, again, not perfect. There are bugs, like there's visual bugs. I've seen a few things online that people have sort of encountered as far as like mission breaks and stuff like that, that I didn't experience at all in my time. Like, literally the only issues I had were visual. So, I just think there's something special about a Bethesda game. It delivers on everything that you would want from a Skyrim or Fallout in space. It obviously expands upon their usual suite of gameplay options. Like, you've still got probably the best combat they've put out. Like, I've always found, like, Skyrim, the Elder Scrolls, all that to be really clunky in terms of how they, like, handle combat.
Yeah.
Even Fallout, they needed VATS because that thing was clunky as hell. I feel like this is really tight. Like, the shooting is pretty satisfying. I never, like, shied away from a combat situation at all. The only thing I would say that I found was lost throughout the experience was that sense of I think the exploration does suffer a little bit in this. Like, there are a lot of great handcrafted areas and cities and stuff that you'll want to visit and you'll want to return to, but the sense of wandering around a place like Skyrim or like, you know, Washington or Boston in the Fallout games, it's sort of not there. Like, I've been talking to Shannon a little bit about it, and like he said, like in Skyrim, for example, you could just like walk around for hours in that map and just stumble across things that were worth seeing and stuff like that. And that is still here, but it's spread so thin across so many locations that I feel like it's something special is lost there in that way. So
I kind of get the impression that like, rather than being a singular sort of open world, it's kind of that same scale, or if not like a larger scale, is rather just divided up into smaller hubs instead. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's true.
And in between.
And because there is so much procedural generation, like not all of it is worth seeing, like truth be told, like, like you'll go to planets that are generated, and while you might stumble across some cool things, like, all in all, it's mainly the curated areas that have the, you know, real worthwhile content from what I've experienced so far. But there are a lot of cool side quests that I've stumbled on that, like I've seen a lot of people raving about one in particular online that I was a really big fan on. So I'm cool with, happy to see people are enjoying that a lot. So,
yeah, that was certainly a question I had for you. It was like, did the core, like, were the side missions like as interesting as the core campaign? Like, were they equally as rewarding to do, or were you kind of more eager just to see out the main story than dabble in this?
The way I played the game, like, I wouldn't recommend anyone do, obviously, like, due to trying to not knowing what the game was going into it and wanting to like put out a review where I could roll credits. Like, I sort of did mainline the story, which it's not how I would usually play a game like this, and it's not how I'd recommend anyone play the game. Like I said, in my experience, like, the main quest has a lot of cool stuff. Like, they've effectively got Bethesda's attempt at like cracking the slab by like from Dishonored. Like, there's like a real cool, like, timey-wimey, jumpy-wumpy sort of a mission that's really cool. And
sick.
Yeah, and then there is some cool side stuff. Like, there's a mission called the Mantis, or Lair of the Mantis, that as soon as you stumble across it, if you're able to do it, definitely go do it. It's really cool. Even all like the faction stuff, like, a lot of it seems like really thought out, and like all the quest lines are really cool, as they always have been. Like with Skyrim, I always loved like the Dark Brotherhood. I always liked those quest lines and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of vibes about, like, I haven't seen them all through yet, so obviously I'm sort of speculating that they'll deliver, but I've heard a lot of people raving about the faction quest lines. So, that said, I do think the main quest line is cool. Like, they do a lot of good stuff establishing the lore of this universe. Obviously, the big bad and sort of how it all ties in at the end and works into the new game plus, I think, is really clever. Like, obviously, I won't elaborate because people want to get there themselves. But I think the game does a lot of cool stuff. And what a lot of people say is right, where once I rolled credits and I started again coming into the new game plus, I really felt like the game, not begun, but like it sort of like hit its straps a little bit, and I was starting to have a lot more fun with it. So,
Yeah, I had a note to ask you about that. A lot of people seem to say that, A, it kind of takes a little while to kind of get into the game, which I feel like is quite a common occurrence now with open world games. We've spoken about it a lot on the show. But then, yeah, that post-game experience really kind of hits home too. But it sounds like that's kind of the less said about that, the better. Is that your sort of attitude on it?
I'm not too sure that I agree with the fact that the game is slow, like a slow to start. Like,
yeah, I
think you almost get whiplash with how quick they get you into space. Like, it almost is bad from a storytelling perspective that you literally are like whipped into this like situation where like you're in Constellation, suddenly you've been exposed to these artifacts and bang, your journey begins. Like, I think they actually get into it really quickly. I don't think it's plotting at all.
Without explaining much of the systems or anything. I think that is actually one of the things that I've found, for better or for worse.
Yeah. Yeah, like you can come at that multiple ways, I suppose. Like, you could say that they wanted people to stumble across systems naturally, like how Zelda handles things and with lack of tutorializing. Mm. But I do think in a lot of ways the game doesn't tutorialize enough. Like, doesn't really explain many of its systems. Like, I went a bulk of the game without even exploring like the crafting or anything like that, because it doesn't force you to, which I like. But then you're also missing out on a lot of like cool opportunities to like do your research and like better your weapons and all that sort of stuff, which I never really explored too much. But I think the game could have done a little bit better in explaining those things, but all in all, I don't think it's necessarily to the detriment of it.
Cool. I think you've addressed a lot of the concerns, not so much concerns, I suppose, but questions I had in the lead up to the release of this game. I'm excited to get my hands on it. It'll be out today, as of people listening to this podcast. Perhaps they're playing it and listening to the show all at once.
I'll be playing it after we finish this. So,
Shannon, Video Game Chronicle, amongst others, reported that the premium edition upgrade of Starfield topped the Xbox Store's best-selling list in this past week. The upgrade allowed Game Pass subscribers to play the game early at an additional fee to their subscription. What does this reveal, do you think, about Xbox's strategy surrounding Game Pass? Do you expect that we'll see more of this style of release?
I think so. I think we've all spoken at length on this podcast about, like, we don't understand how, like, Xbox Game Pass is making money and sustainable. So I feel like this is their best of both worlds, especially for a game like this. Like, I think you said before we started recording, you and, like, asked who was staying up playing at midnight. And, like, to think that it's not out yet is quite insane, given it's, like, dominated the
clearly
internet for
so
the last
many
week.
People have, yeah,
exactly.
taken up this offer
so, like,
and played early.
I don't even know how much money that is, but it's got to be a good chunk of money that they've got in their pocket that they wouldn't have otherwise. A lot of people are up in arms about it and think that it's, taking advantage of gamers. But I feel like we've seen this stuff for as long as I can remember with like season passes and online passes. And there's always something to get the most out of.
Realistically, it's so much different with what EA's been doing with like Champions Edition.
Yeah, early access is not a new concept at all.
And Xbox either. I think it's just there's a spotlight on this because a lot of people want to be playing it, and there is so much discourse online that like you've got FOMO not playing it. So clearly it works. Like it works. If people want to pay, they do. If not, it's on Game Pass. Like it's a little, I get why it is a little bit different if like you're playing it on Game Pass just with a subscription, like that there's a big difference to that to paying for it, but you're also getting like the expansion and other things. And I think it's worth it if you want to be able to sink time into the weekend, like just pay it.
I forgot that tidbit. That is a major sort of selling point, is you get the expansion, the first DLC included as well.
And it was seamless. Like, you didn't have to buy the game. Like, it's better than having to outlay $120 or Game Pass. Yeah. Like, at least it's somewhere in the middle. I think, if that keeps Game Pass alive and keeps them doing that good thing, then I think, I don't have an issue with it personally.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about a little bit more about people bumping up prices a little later in the show. Mm. But Kieran, sticking with Starfield for the moment, it hit more than 230,000 concurrent players on Steam in its first 2 hours of early access. So clearly, to the earlier point, a lot of people taking them up on this offer. How successful do you expect this game to be for Bethesda? And maybe in comparison, some of their other releases as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty wild considering like Steam obviously is different to Game Pass. So that's people paying like full price then, isn't it? For like early access.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
Yeah. I think like, I don't know, my expectation in comparison to say like Skyrim would be that it would be like a little bit less popular. It's like a new IP, obviously, a different setting, all that kind of stuff. But I think, like, with Game Pass, this game's just going to have legs for years. Like, it's yeah, there's no reason not to try it, even if you're not a fan of Bethesda or the, like, NASA punk setting or whatever. So, I don't know if it's going to make as much money maybe as Skyrim, but it's definitely going to have the same, well, like, you know, a big user base, and it's going to last a while. So I think as long as they keep updating and pumping out new content and stuff for it as well.
Yeah. I think for me, it's like the charm of their style of game. I'm like, I'm really interested to see how that then translates into this kind of sci-fi future setting, space setting, I should say. Yeah, I love the Elder Scroll games immensely. I haven't really kind of got into the Fallout series the same sort of way, but as a big kind of sci-fi fan myself, like, I speculate I'm going to enjoy this, and certainly excited to be able to play some of it when it drops later this night as of recording. But James, you have been able to play a little bit as well. I heard Shannon mention he'd been playing some too. How have you found the game so far, James?
Yeah, it's I'm really like 12-15 hours in, I think. So
early days in the grand scheme of things then.
Yeah, like I don't know, I don't like Fallout that much, right? And I feel like this is probably closer to Fallout than Skyrim. I don't know what it is, like, I just can't put my finger on it. But yeah, I am enjoying
mechanically
it
mechanically, like, wise. I imagine it's much more like, it's not a sword and shield, it's gunplay again.
Yeah, like, but Brody's right. Like, the combat is the best they've ever had, for sure. Nice. Like, it actually plays like a shooter, not like some jank-ass RPG. But, like...
Although it is still a jank-ass RPG about... in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah. I just forgot, like, how, you know, you can run around this game, pick everything up, and then at the end of it, you've just got all this useless shit, and then you're encumbered. And, like, I just am really wrestling with all of that and getting back into that, yeah. You know? Like, you can literally pick up...
I saw a video where someone had,
like, why? You know,
I saw a video where someone had filled the cockpit of their ship potatoes. With potatoes. That's wild.
Yeah,
and like, they all had their own physics. Well. Like,
but it's like, yeah, I don't know what it is. Like,
the opinion of someone that has never played a Bethesda game, studios game before, like, jumping into this for the first time, and just like what their opinion on all of that sort of stuff is. Like, yeah, instantly overweight.
It is very, it feels as old as those games. And that's like both a good and a bad thing. Like, I think, like, I do think it doesn't feel like it takes massive leaps forward. I don't know how to put this without sounding down on it. Cause I do like it. Like, I'm still playing it. I want to go and play it after this. But like, I don't know what it is. Like, it doesn't feel as new as, say, like, when I first played, I don't know, like Oblivion or Fallout or anything like that. But yeah, like, I agree the onboarding is kind of rough, like, but then at the same time, once again, if they made me sit through this whole fucking, like, settlement or outpost building shit, I'd just be so bored of that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I kind of appreciate it at the same time. But yeah, overall, like, I am liking it. I normally play stealth in these games, and stealth is really shit in this game, I feel, so I kind of hope they don't gimp it in Elder Scrolls 6 as well, if that's the direction they're going.
I feel like a lot of
overall,
the...
like, it's...
I was going to say, I feel like a lot of the chosen pathways you might take in this game aren't really rewarding from the start, just because of the way they handle the perk system, like, which is another thing that I wasn't super jazzed on. Like, I feel like they could have done that a little better. So I feel like once you hit, like... I've heard from a lot of people, it's one of those games where, like, if you pick a certain playstyle and you stick with it and you sort of level in on those perks at the start, then, like, buy, you know... New Game Plus and stuff, then you're really going to be set up for what you want to do. But it's not one of those games where you can sort of, like, pump a handful of points into each discipline. Like, you just won't have a great time with it. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard as well, anecdotally, that, like, the kind of more you hone in on, like, one particular character type and kind of embrace the role-playing element of it wholeheartedly, and even kind of, like, getting into the psyche of your character a little bit, like, that's kind of where you... find the connection with the game. So maybe I'll be space pirate and fully embrace that character. Sounds fire.
I think overall for me is, like, I just don't know how I'm meant to be playing it. I don't know how to, like, am I meant to be jumping from, like, system to system? Like, am I meant to? It's like almost like too. That. It's almost like what's, too big.
What's your advice then, Brody?
I know what he'll say.
Maybe. No, well, I mean,
James that, is like, I know the answer.
No.
I think that's part of the beauty of it, is like, you can sort of do what you want. Like, you can go off and play it like No Man's Sky and farm resources and stuff like that, or you can just do what you want to do and, like, be a space pirate. Like, you can sort of do anything, and that is, it's both liberating but also quite restricting if you have, like, paralysis of choice. So, you just need to work yourself out.
I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah, it is like proper decision paralysis. Like, I just started going to all the temples today just because I could.
And that's what I had to do. Like, mainlining the story.
I didn't feel like I was moving forward.
Yeah, like, and just like mainlining the temples wasn't rewarding at all. Like, because it's sort of very samey. But yeah,
yeah. All right. Well, we do have plenty more that we want to talk about today, but do go and check out Brody's full review of Starfield over on the website. I'm looking forward to getting stuck into myself. I'm sure we'll talk about it more as we all get to spend more time with it. But sticking with Bethesda, Pete Hines spoke to GameIndustry.biz in the week, saying that Arkane would continue working on Redfall and that, quote, they don't quit or abandon stuff just because it didn't start right. He added that Redfall didn't get the start that we wanted, but it's still a fun game and we're going to keep working on it. We're going to do 60 frames per second. There will be people 10 years from now who are going to join Game Pass and Redfall will be there. Brody, coming back to you, seeing as you reviewed Redfall earlier this year, giving it a 6.5 out of 10, how salvageable do you think the game might be? I think that was pretty on par, that score.
I can't remember. how salvageable do I think it might be? I think it's salvageable. I think it has a sort of quasi live service setup where I think they can sort of just make these hot fixes and like add content as they go and sort of patch in all these things that people want, like 60 frames and all that sort of stuff. And I think they can salvage a bit of experience here because it wasn't unplayable. It wasn't the worst thing I've ever played. Like, it was bit content bare and like it was a little boring rolling in and out of our, you know, fire station hub. But all in all, like, I feel like there is something there that they could turn into, you know, something, you know,
yeah,
decent.
I think I just saw Shannon get traumatic flashbacks of having to go back through to the fire station to get new missions every time. Kieran, to ask you now, do you believe people be interested in playing in the game 10 years from now?
10 years is a long time. I hope so. I hope they
I guess
will.
There's a technicality in Pete Hines' statement where, like, you know, there'll be some people in 10 years' time that want to play it. And you know what? I'm sure there will be, even if it's just like two or three people. Maybe GTA enough five to kind was of 10 years fill ago, out one it? Lobby. Well, true. Like, are we really comparing Redfall to GTA 5 there?
Destiny 1 wasn't even 10 years ago yet. Like, to put that into some perspective, I suppose.
Like,
that's nuts.
Bioshock
wow,
Infinite. What about that?
That's kind I'm sure of people are still playing close-ish. That.
Right, yeah,
that
know.
Was 2011, yeah.
Know.
I think. 13? I don't know.
Kieran, to fire a different question your way then, what do you think is a reasonable amount of time and effort to put into spent salvaging a game that's had a poor reception at launch? When do they cut their losses over at Arkane?
I guess when they're done with it. Like, I feel like if you put out a game and people aren't playing it, but you believe it's still got something, and you've put that time, that sweat into it, and you've got a service like Game Pass to fall back on, where you know that there's always going to be an audience hungry for more. Like, I don't see why they wouldn't give it a good go still, and put the time to try and turn it around, but.
Yeah, I agree. And like, whilst there's some like clear things that you can fix that people have complained about, like the 60 FPS sort of thing, I would really love them to fix the kind of progression and like the way that it handles like player save data and stuff. Like having to play 4 hours with Brody as part of his review and then launch into my own game and restart. Sorry, I mean like having to restart, not having to play with you, Brody. Having to restart was like so frustrating, and just like this kind of day and age with like these cooperative experiences, I kind of expect it to be a little bit better than that, Baldur's Gate being an exception, I guess, given like what it's trying to do with a campaign structure and stuff. But yeah, that like, if you can kind of fix those kind of clear gripes that people have, and that's not enough to then bring people back in, and it's clear, like, the amount of work still required is going to be significantly more, that's problematic. I do fear that in the case of Redfall, it seemed to be there was, like, design decisions made that held that game back, and those are very hard to undo and rectify. So, yeah, maybe that's a case where you cut your losses. But Shannon, do you see yourself going back to Redfall at any stage, going back to that fire station?
Not unless we're all jumping on for another reason to help Brody give a 9 out of 10 out of the box.
You're boosting achievements.
I don't know. It was fun. Like, I liked it. But yeah, I don't know how I feel about them, like, committing to these games if it's just not there to begin with. Like, it'd be a lot of work to give this a longer shelf life. But, you know, I don't think so.
I think with Game Pass, though, they need to kind of make sure that that back catalogue is there and good. Like,
yeah,
you can't just pretend.
I know, Halo, you can't compare Halo and this. Like, Halo Infinite is the game in support for 10 years, where Redfall, like, it was just bad to begin with. I don't...
Yeah, and to be fair, like, it's been done. Like, Sea of Thieves, like, really came good over time.
Fallout 76. Rainbow Six Siege had a really shit start.
Yeah.
And, like, look at that now. Like, I still
feel like Redfall is a peg below those, to be honest.
Yeah, like, it is. But
and it's a shame to take up that studio.
People were really down on 76 at launch.
Mm. Its scope and breadth, though, like, for Redfall, is so tiny compared to those other games, so it should be easier to fix. Like, I feel like maybe.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. Anyhow, it's not just games that don't have a strong launch that get updates, though. Of course, games that launch strong get added content as well, and that was indeed the case with Final Fantasy 16.
I completed Final Fantasy 16 in the time it took you to do that segue.
The game got a free update this week, just in the last couple of days, featuring different outfits and weapon skins. But more interestingly, two installments of paid DLC were announced alongside a PC version of the game being in development. Kieran, you and I have been talking about Final Fantasy 16 this week because I'm absolutely loving the soundtrack as I continue my playthrough of the game.
Yes.
But details on this DLC are scarce at the moment. What would you like to see added to the game?
I mean, there's at least one big thing I would like to see them add in or explore, which they don't in the game, but I don't,
it might, can you might talk be about a bit spoilery to talk anything? About
yeah.
it.
Not like super spoilery, but like there's something missing from like the main sort of, anyway, I won't,
I'm trying to like, you just want another icon.
I want another icon. That. I want more icons. But also like a different playable character would be cool for them to like section off someone and have you just kind of like go off on their adventure for a bit. After, you know, 50, 60 hours of playing as Clive and no one else.
Yeah, they could put Jill in the game. That would be nice.
Just have Jill as a character.
Yeah, like presence from her at all.
I think, because of the, like, without going into spoilers of it, like, there's obviously that time jump at the start of the game. Like, if they could kind of fill that with, you know, a bit of character exploration, maybe it's around Jill as a character as well. Like, there's heaps they could do there for sure.
Yeah.
Or, like, even kind of Sid as well, like, kind of his, you know, coming to being kind of starting off like the rebellion movement and stuff like that'd be really cool. I don't know what the correct terminology for these things are. You can tell I'm really paying attention to all the lore. I feel like there's been so much world building and so many kind of characters that you meet kind of, you know, halfway through or like at the tail end of their story that it'd be nice to kind of see some further exploration into their characters. So,
definitely.
Yeah, there's tons they could do with it. It's a really cool world they've made with this game. But cool. Eager to see what happens there with Final Fantasy 16. Less enthused, though, with what PlayStation are up to at the moment. They've announced the prices of their subscription service are increasing as of today, once this episode drops. The PlayStation Plus Essential 12-month subscription, so this is the one that you are required to have to play online, and you get the kind of free games each month, but mostly the online play element that people would subscribe to it for. That is going up from $79.95 to $95.95. So from $80 to $96. PlayStation Plus Extra is going from $135 to $170, and the PlayStation Plus Deluxe is going from $155 to $197. So not inconsiderable price jumps. Shannon, what was your reaction to seeing this news?
I was pretty shocked, but then I looked at everything and I think I was waiting for James's eye roll. I think the essential bump and price isn't bad. Like, it's in line with Xbox Live. I think I can't think of a streaming service that hasn't had some bump. I think it looks worse because you can only buy it as a 12-month pack, or they only put up that. So if you're talking $2 a month versus a $20 increase, like, it sounds worse. So I don't think it's bad in the sense that, like, we don't want to be paying more for this crap and we shouldn't be paying for online, period. But that's too far gone at this point. I think the other two, yeah, are just insane. Like, I have never subscribed to either of those, like, after the 30 or 60 days they put in initially. Like, I have no reason to. I can't see why many people would have a reason to. So to think that they've put those up is insane to me. Like, I think there was already enough buffer between essential and those, so what they are. But I understand the first one, and I think they're going to get enough money from that to then offset not putting up the other two, because that just seems ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I think I'm a little annoyed that looking at this percentage wise, it is a 20% increase, which is a sizable jump. And yes, I know, like, inflation's a thing at the moment. Obviously, like, other people putting up the prices, I can't see inflation, like, really impacting the rollout of this service, truth be told. But 20%, like, that is a serious bump. I find that a little hard to justify personally, especially for something that's, like, you know, online play is such an essential part of, you know, gaming this day and age. To have to fork out $100 a year nearly for that, it's like, that's considering the console's only $500 in the first place, you're going to pay over more the value of the console throughout its lifetime. It's
console should be free. Make them free.
Well, I mean, maybe that is the road we get to at some stage. It's just like you get it free as part of the subscription service.
Yeah, I'm for it. Why not?
If they're going to just, you know, drag money out of people through service fees, you'll pay $600 for anyway.
That's why not.
Well, yeah.
And that's why they're putting all these up, well, the essential one, because
you'll still pay for that too.
Pay it. Exactly.
But I mean, like, if you look what Xbox are doing, like, they're trying to get their service anywhere. Like, you're not... Yes, you're buying a Samsung TV, but you're not buying that to be a games console, and you can still get Game Pass on there and play it. So, like, I think there is rationale to what Shannon's saying. James, to come to you, though, inflation, obviously an issue affecting everything right now. Are you in any way then surprised by this news?
No.
Cool. Penetrating insight, as always, James.
What do you want me to say? There's nothing I can say. Like, I think the top tier, especially. Yeah, I don't know. I could have read the notes and be like, "This is terrible, Ewan. What are you doing to work with?" But real talk, the top tier in Australia, especially, like, I don't know, man. That's not it. I think I think this could be potentially mitigated by maybe just upping the amount of games you can play, like, on the service. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of classic stuff, because that doesn't really cost them much, I don't think, in the big scheme of things. But I don't see that happening either. So, to answer your question, I'm still sitting on no, but, like, I don't... I'm not.
I mean, I suppose that would be one way to justify these price increases, if they're, like, timed with, like, you know, decent additions and value to the service.
Yeah, like, this was the shittest PlayStation Plus offering I've ever seen. Like, this
yeah, like,
thing.
Literally,
like,
here's the Saints Row reboot and a $20 a year increase. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Brody, what might you say to everyone frustrated by this news?
Let your wallet do the talking.
Play stuff.
Did I freeze?
No. I think everyone's just laughing at my shit questions.
I don't know. I would say let your wallet do the talking. Like, I've already cancelled mine, so mine runs out in April next year or whatever it is. So I've given that the flick. I think I was on the medium one, based on the middle size. Yeah, I was extra, so I was like, nah, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would certainly never describe you as extra birdie. I think you're very level-headed. Kieran, what level are you currently subscribed to? And do you consider changing it as a result of this news?
Yeah, I'm on the deluxe tier, which like I got a year initially when they changed over. But I'm one of those people that like I've let it lapse, so I'm still paying month to month. So I'm paying more than that like 12-month price anyway.
Ooh, ouch.
So I think what I need to do very soon is bulk. Yeah, I know. I need to bulk buy a 12-month subscription, and when I do that, I'm definitely not going for the deluxe. It'll be like the extra or like the standard one, unless PlayStation comes out and says, hey, we're pumping all this money into like R&D to make like a really cool PS2 emulator and we're going to give you all the games, then I'm like, nah.
Yeah, that could bring me back. Add resistance, hey, Shannon, then suddenly I'm back in. Yeah, I wish I'd bulk bought another 12 months before the price hike. But
do you think they make all their live service games that are coming out available through PlayStation Plus? Like as free to play games to try and make the service worthwhile.
That would be cool.
If it's free to play, don't you not need Plus?
Yeah, that was always their thing over Live, wasn't it? That you didn't need it initially. Mm,
true.
Same but maybe, Apex. Maybe it will be. Apex. Maybe it will be.
Yeah.
It'll be part of extra, maybe.
Is that still the case? So if you download Fortnite, you don't need PlayStation Plus to play that online?
Yeah. Or Switch or Xbox.
And it's Apex, I think, as well. Right. Maybe Rocket League.
If it's like free to start, I think it doesn't cost. You don't have to buy a sub.
Yeah, right. There you go. I remember that being a thing, but I assumed it kind of just like changed over time. What about Call of Duty? Call of Duty, you still need PlayStation Plus? FIFA, you still need PlayStation Plus?
Warzone, no.
Okay, right. So if it's just exclusively multiplayer, you're good. But if it's got
it's free to start.
Okay.
There's a debate.
It's in the name. Free to play.
Yeah, yes.
The developers of Saints Row and Red Faction Volition has sadly closed down after 30 years of operation. Their statement read, this past June, Embracer Group announced a restructuring program to strengthen Embracer and maintain its position as a leader in the video game industry. As part of that program, they evaluated strategic and operational goals and made the difficult decision to close Volition effective immediately. James, I know you were particularly annoyed by some of Embrace's messaging around this closure. What has been your reaction to this news?
Like, I mean, I don't know if annoyed is the right. I just find the tweet was like something like, we are very sad to see Volition go, but Red Faction and Saints Row will live on or something. And I'm just like, well, if you want to keep using those brands, like, why are you dumping them? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's what doesn't really make sense to me.
Kind of.
Yeah, like, yeah. Like, I don't, like, I would imagine, like, I don't know. I was about to make an inappropriate comparison. But, like, I just don't think that is a good, like, I feel like everyone who's working at Volition is like, well, why the fuck did you get rid of us then? You know?
Yeah.
But then I guess, like, at the same time, like, I mean, I look at, you know, their last two games, and I think, you know, the writing was on the wall for a while with Ages of Mayhem and then Saints Row, the reboot. Like, they weren't both heavy hitters, I guess. So, but yeah, it just sucks because, like, Red Faction was great. I loved Red Faction so much. Guerrilla was amazing.
Yeah. And the original kind of Saints Row run, like, very popular as well, like 2 and 3.
I still would argue that those games did so well in the absence of GTA. Like, and I feel like once Rockstar hit their stride, transitioning to, you know, HD with GTA 4 and GTA 5 and stuff, that's when it was kind of, they had to pivot to stupid, which is what they did for 3 and 4. And then it just couldn't sustain itself. It was that ridiculous. So, yeah, I can see why they were successful at first, but yeah, definitely. You just can't compete with GTA.
Yeah. Sorry, it was 3 and 4 that were the two big ones. Shannon, how much do you put this down to the most recent Saints Row reboot? Obviously, that fell rather flat.
Lose Shannon? You froze there, but I'm just going to go off what's written on this sheet. That's a hard question. Like James just said, like, they've had a few in a row that haven't been amazing games. And I feel like this Saints Row in particular, like, clearly had a huge marketing budget. It had everything going for it and definitely was just a letdown in a number of areas, and I'm sure it didn't perform commercially. But yeah, it's still rough in my eyes. Like James said, like, these are the people behind these franchises, and I think we all kind of assumed that they would just go with the studios, but no, they're living on, just not with this team. So that would be brutal. I can't imagine a world where they're not, some of them aren't going to retain jobs elsewhere, but is that not the case?
I think they were sort of said they were going to make it every effort to kind of shuffle people around internally and find a home for them elsewhere, but I'm sure as part of this kind of broader restructuring program that they're doing, there won't be a place for everyone. I'd have thought, rather sadly, but
yeah, rough.
Who knows? Maybe it does. They do find some way to work around it. Brody, do you want to see the Saints Row IP live on? Is it one that you've got a particular attachment to in any capacity?
Once upon a time, maybe, like back when it was Saints Row 1 and 2, like I didn't necessarily vibe with the silly stuff, but I can certainly see why it was appealing. But I'm sort of the mind that, you know, if they are going to dump this team, I don't necessarily want to see someone else pick it up and try and run with it. Like, it feels gross to me. And like, this news just sucks because, like James said, like Red Faction is a franchise that I grew up with, like in the PS2 days, and like holds a little bit of a special place. Like, I remember the destructive environments being fairly groundbreaking at the time, pardon the pun. So to see that sort of go away just like that, 30 years of history, because Embracer can't manage their shit, seems unfortunate, obviously, to say the least.
Yeah. Kieran, what about yourself? Red Faction, Saints Row, have you got an attachment to either of them? Would you like to see another studio pick them up?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same mind. Like, I really liked the Red Faction games, especially Armageddon, and like the early Saints Row. But I think the Saints Row reboot kind of just proved that there's nothing left in that idea. They just need to, world just needs to forget about that series now. Unfortunately,
laying down
very
facts.
Somber.
He's cold out. I'm
fairly sure I'm on the record as well, like not having any interest in Saints Row. Like, the kind of crassness and crudity of that series. Like,
we've got Rock really, City now, baby.
Never really spoke to
but it
me.
Also, like, it was so over the top, and that's what it had going for it. And then this latest one was kind of not that, but not as good as Grand Theft Auto. So I don't know. They just went away from what it was, and it didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. All the same, it's obviously sad to see a studio, particularly with so much kind of history within the industry, being shuttered. And hopefully everyone kind of lands on their feet that's affected by the closure. I mentioned earlier in the show, though, loving the Final Fantasy 16 soundtrack, which prompted me to ask for today's rapid fire question. What is your favorite video game soundtrack of all time? And Kieran, seeing as you and I were talking about it this week, let me start with you. What... You okay, Brody?
I was just laughing at like Kieran's expression, like he was like searching for an answer. He's just like,
I did hear him like clacking on his keyboard earlier, so maybe he saw this question coming up in the notes. And he's like, I better do some research.
No.
Do you have an answer, Kieran?
I don't have an answer, not because I need to do research, but because there are too many. I think probably Chrono Cross on the PS1. Is a soundtrack that like stands out to me as like an easy pick. But also Sea of Stars, which I haven't experienced the full soundtrack yet, but like if you're talking about recent memory, definitely that.
Brody, I saw you nod along there. Sea of Stars, yours?
Yeah. I'll give you three because it's too hard to narrow it down. So
sure.
All time history, let's say Banjo-Kazooie. More recently, Ori and the Will of the Wisps. And playing right now, Sea of Stars is a bop. So, yeah.
I kind of like that format. What about yourself, James?
I'm going to not, like, I can say every Resident Evil game, but realistically, though, the first Mass Effect, there's literally nothing like it. It is the synthiest of synths. And, like Vigil especially, the best track ever in like any game. It's so fucking good. You can't beat it. Anyone. Sorry.
Okay, yeah.
Can we go? We'll go.
Real mind.
I thought he was going to follow the format.
Yeah, I know I asked this question, but it's a tough one for me as well. I definitely have a soft spot for like the synthy sort of stuff, like Hotline Miami soundtrack banging. I love Ghost Runner soundtrack too, and Neon White more recently as well. Really like that too. But kind of more like orchestral side of things, if I'm going to do a two sort of format, I guess. Halo holds a really soft spot in my mind.
I didn't know if like a cat had broken into your shed of what was happening.
That was a possum. That showed up really pixelated on my end. What was the vinyl?
I had visual aids. It's Death's Door.
Oh, Death's Door. Nice. Oh, yeah. That is
great,
a good one.
Great soundtrack. Well worth the purchase. It's in plastic still. Way that goes.
Just threw it across the room. I was saying, but the more orchestral ones, Halo holds a soft spot in my mind. The Last of Us, obviously, when the path kicks in and those final credits reduce me to tears. And then Shannon, finally, your favorite soundtrack
of all
time? If
I'm thinking, The Last of Us is a good one. I wasn't going to say that. But if I'm thinking of like soundtracks I've actually listened to, like, in my house, like
which Ape Escape?
Yeah, Ape Escape. No, Skyrim. I would say like is a really good soundtrack.
Yeah.
But if I'm thinking like games that like the soundtrack are instantly recognizable and stuck in my head, like Yoshi's Island has one of the most memorable and just incredible soundtracks for a Nintendo game. The theme and just everything about that is just amazing.
Yeah. Nice mix.
I would also just like to quickly throw in Silent Hill 2, but I can't, because I forgot about, I feel like that needs to be paid service, but I don't listen to that by myself, because, like, if someone were to,
that
like,
would be worrying.
Walk into the room,
yeah, that's
and
the thing,
like, what are you listening to, and I'm just like, I'm just a serial killer now.
Yeah, like, I'm not listening to these soundtracks, like, Ghost Runner and Hotline Miami, yes, I have put those songs, like, into playlists, but I'm not, like, God of War's soundtrack is phenomenal too, but I'm not just sitting in my bedroom at night listening to that. That might be a bit of a weird
Mass Effect. I did, like, Vigil is so good, man. Like,
just the lights off and just like,
yeah,
for
like
2 hours.
All right, now it's time for What the Wiki, the Press Start podcast game show where the previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page for an unknown game, and we, the contestants, must guess the game. A point is awarded for each correct guess, and the winner is revealed after some person scores 2 points. I've messed up that sentence. But yes, you're the first to score 2 points. You conclude the round, and you're the winner for the day. But I am, apparently. Look, when you've been speaking for 47 minutes straight, it all starts to fall apart. Brody, you're currently in the lead on 23 points. James, just behind on 22 points. Shannon and Kieran, you're tied in third place on 20 points each. I'm in fourth with 19 points. Harry on 1 point. And James W. nil pois. And Kieran, as last week's winner, you are in the hosting chair today.
It's really tight, isn't it? So tight.
I don't like how determined James looks.
Yeah, he's let you have this lead for long enough.
Sitting here.
I thought that oof from Shannon was directed at me when you said that I was hosting, and Shannon was like, oof.
I'm keen for that.
James, next week I want to see you kind of like rock up with like a sweatband on, like ready to go.
No need, he'll be hosting.
Well, maybe, yeah.
I'm ready.
All right.
Clean sweep.
I apologize if this is a mess, because I forgot that I was doing this until Ewan reminded me right before we started recording. First one. This game is a 2004 science fiction action adventure stealth video game developed by Free Radical Design and published by Codemasters.
Shannon.
Players assume control. Yeah.
Time Splitters 2.
It is not Time Splitters 2.
James.
James?
Is the Second Sight?
Fuck you. It's yes.
I'm God glad I had it. A guess. I was in it.
Oh, I knew that would give it away.
James moves up tied with Brody.
Did you pull a face when Shannon buzzed in because you knew he wouldn't get it?
No, I just like, it was quick. I hadn't gotten to like any of the details yet.
I had enough details.
So he's not rude. Yeah.
All right.
Like you.
James is a sniper. Watch out.
All right. Second game. It is a graphic adventure game played from a third-person perspective. The player controls a protagonist who must investigate a series of mysterious murders. Throughout the game, the player explores various three-dimensional environments. Ewan?
Is this The Wolf Among Us?
I've made this too easy. It is.
Yes, let's go.
Wow.
Ooh, it suddenly got very spicy. Keep going, Kieran.
Did it? Okay.
Yeah.
The console version of this game is a third-person action-adventure video game set in an open world based on a city, which I won't divulge. Players take on the role of Spider-Man and... Fuck.
Ewan!
No, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep going.
You got to keep going? What do you mean?
You won't get it. And I was too concentrated on not revealing the city. Go on, Ewan.
Are you throwing me a bone? I was just going to say Spider-Man.
No, it's not Spider-Man.
He said console version.
Shannon.
Oh, true. Fuck.
Spider-Man Shattered Memories. Is that even a game?
No. It is, but it's not that.
Okay.
James. Is it Spider-Man 2?
It's Spider-Man 2.
Fuck!
Are we going to give him that, though? That was kind of my fault.
What do you mean?
That was kind of my fault. I mean, hey, Kieran, you're hosting this, so you adjudicate how you
it's
want.
It's up to you. That's too much. You can annul if you want.
That's a flub round.
It is a flub round.
Brady will just be like angry.
That's my bad.
I'm going to go to bed angry. I'm going to punch my pillow.
So I think we're ruling that we're awarding that point to James, yeah?
Sure.
All right, cool. So that leaves the scoring. James leapfrogs over Brody up into first place on 24 so points. And with the 1 point I managed to scrape out of it, I bumped back up into third place, tied with Shannon and Kieran on 20 points.
Massive.
Yeah. Got spicy. We love. And with that, let's bring an end to what was this week's episode of the Press Start Podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener or the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at press.au and visit the site at pressstart.com.au. We've been joined today by Shannon.
Yes, you can follow me at Shannon Grixty on everything. Do it.
Sharing his review of Starfield, it was Brody.
Thank you. You can follow me on most things at Brody_DG.
Jumping up into first place on What the Wiki, it was James.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter or X at James, @JAMZ.
And screwing me out of the points in What the Wiki, it was Kieran.
Screwed everyone out of everything. I'm Hash Brown on X, so yeah.
I'm not going to say any more about X. I've been your host, Ewan Roxburgh. You can follow me on Twitter at Ewan_Roxburgh. Thanks again for tuning in, and until next time, happy gaming.
Bye.
Bye.